higher education and labor. I know that my co-chair is on her way but running late. I know that there are a number of committee members on their way running late, but meanwhile we want to be respectful to the many of you who come and pull together data for us to review. My friend from the Labor Committee is here. Do you have anything that you'd like to add?
Thank you very much. I've heard from Senator Gomes and Representative Porter, who will be absent today. They're out of state attending the NBCSL, the National Black Caucus of State Legislators Conference in Washington, D.C. Congratulations to them, and they send their regrets. Otherwise, I'm ready.
Any other comments from chairs or ranking members? If not, let's get underway. I've been informed that under Roman numeral 3, though we had an initial order that had our esteemed superintendent of the technical high schools going second, that she will lead off this morning, which I think would be terrific. So, Dr. Torres, if you would please come forward, we are ready for your presentation.
Buenos dias. Good morning. Good morning to the distinguished members of the Education Committee, members of the Higher Education and Employment Advancement Committee, and members of the Labor and Public Employees Committee. Also, the Honorable Co-Chairs Andrew Fleischman and Gail Slausberg. My name is Nivia Torres, and I serve as superintendent of the Connecticut Technical High School System. I am accompanied here today by a group of students here to my left. These students represent the future workforce of the state of Connecticut, and they embody the qualities that we instill in all of our students: leadership, teamwork, service, and professionalism. Also with me today are a group of CTHSS leaders, teachers, our chairman of the board, and a board member as well, Mr. John Barrasso, Mr. Robert Trefry, chairman of our board. Representing our close partnership with General Dynamics Electric Boat, Mr. Howard Jenkins and Susan Adams, and from the Eastern Workforce Investment Board, Mr. John Beauregard. You will have the opportunity to hear from them later on in the presentation. I want to extend my sincere appreciation to Commissioner Jackson and Commissioner Smith. Their insight and valuable guidance has helped us shape CTHSS and set a new pathway for career and technical education in the state of Connecticut. Every year, we have the opportunity to share with this body the accomplishments and great strides the district has made in representing Connecticut's workforce needs. Today's presentation will focus on three key areas: success, Connecticut's investment in technical training, and partnerships. Under the leadership of Governor Malloy, our congressional delegation, and the legislature, our state has become the hub for the aerospace industry and national defense. At the Connecticut Technical High School System, we celebrate these investments in our state that will help to continue to boost our economy and our job growth. With this influx of investments, we must also recognize our need to invest in technical training. Investing in technical training is not an option, but a necessity if Connecticut is to remain competitive. Our economy is linked to the strength and the skills of our current and our future workforce. We know that the manufacturers, the welders, the electricians, and the engineers of the future are now in our local and our elementary and middle schools. As a statewide system, the CTHSS has a unique responsibility to continue to grow the pipeline by training the future workforce. We also realize that we must continue to create opportunities for short-term training for incumbent, unemployed, and displaced workers within the state. Today, you will hear how we are addressing these challenges and preparing for the future. I believe you have a packet in front of you that has a copy of this presentation along with our annual report. I'd like to start the presentation with a quote That really serves as our mantra for this school year. Success is not final. Failure is not fatal. It is the courage to continue that counts. And as a system, we realize that last year's successes were not the end point, but that we continue to grow, we continue to evolve. We learn from our failures, and we take the courage to continue in spite of our challenges. We look to this year with enthusiasm and optimism. This slide represents our strategic plan in action. We have four goals. This is year three of our strategic plan. Each goal is aligned to a focus area, from enhancing employer engagement and aligning with business industry needs, to making sure that our system is flexible, it's innovative, and it is responsive. Be assured that everything that we do at CTHSS is directly linked to one of these strategic plan goals and focus areas. One of our successes from last year was using geography as an asset. We realize that we have 20 locations across the state, and sometimes establishing coherence can be a challenge. So we divided our district in regions, region 1 through 4, and we did this for two purposes. First, to allow for professional learning communities to thrive and to grow, and to give teachers and leaders the opportunity to collaborate and work together and learn from best practices, but also to support our strategic plan goal of being responsive to industry needs. For example, if you look at Region 4, the southeastern corner of the state, we have a thriving partnership with Electric Boat, and we realize that that partnership might necessitate a revision of our curriculum and our programs to make sure that the training that we're providing in that particular region of the state is responsive to those workforce needs. This slide represents the pride that we have in who we are and what we do. February is National Career and Technical Education Month, and for the last 3 years, we have made a concerted effort to rebrand and market ourselves differently so that folks around the state and at the national level recognize the value of technical education and the value of CTHSS on the state's workforce. A couple of success stats. Recently, we heard that the state has made great strides in the graduation rates here in Connecticut, and that is a source of pride for all of us who are educators and who are invested in our students. At the CTHSS, we have reached an all-time high with our graduation rate. It is 97.4 in comparison to the state's graduation average of 87.2 and the national rate of 83.2. When you look at outcomes and investing in something that is yielding results, this is a successful statistic to keep in mind. Four of our technical high schools took bronze in the U.S. News and World Report high school rankings for last year. Those schools are Bullard Havens in Bridgeport, Caner Tech in Waterbury, Platt Tech in Milford, and Wilcox Tech in Meriden. And we are very proud to say that we are far-reaching in terms of our services, and 165 out of the 169 Connecticut towns are represented within our student body. Some additional success stats. For the sixth year in a row, our district and Connecticut has been recognized by the National Network of Partnership Schools at the Johns Hopkins University for our commitment to family engagement. That is significant for Connecticut, and that is significant for our technical high school system. Last year, we also recognized for the first time with the Superintendent's Award one of our technical high schools because of their ongoing commitment to student achievement, statewide and national recognition, and that school is Norwich Tech in Norwich, Connecticut. In terms of our benchmarks for assessment for mathematics and literacy, we are proud to say that we surpass the national average in literacy achievement using the STAR reading assessment, which is a benchmark that we use in our district. And we have implemented with great success a mastery-based learning program for mathematics to ensure that our youngsters have all of the competencies and skills that they need to be successful in Algebra 1 and beyond. Close to 70% of the students mastered the ALEX math course competencies last year. We are a district that takes great pride in our one-to-one rollout. Last year, we offered technology training for all of our teachers, allowing them to be proficient in Google Apps. We deployed over 3,000 Chromebooks across the district to our incoming ninth graders, and we created over 2 million artifacts, documents, and spreadsheets in Google Classrooms. Work-based learning is a unique program that we have for all of our 11th and 12th graders to make sure that they have access to employers across the state and that they are refining their skills. In the 3 years that we have implemented specific targets for this program, we have been able to place up to 673 students now in work-based learning across the state of Connecticut. Last year, we recognized Cheney Tech in Manchester, Connecticut, for placing close to 100 students in WBL programs. I am proud to say that the top electrician in the country is from the Connecticut Technical High School System in Norwich Tech. Darius Stifo. Darius Stifel won gold in the electrical division at the 2016 Skills USA National Competition, and we're very proud of her for a lot of reasons, but we're also very proud because she is a female in the electrical trade. Please know that initially she received the lowest out of 8 out of 80, and it was an error, it was a mistake in the computation. She was assertive and professional enough to write the Skills USA competition, and the error was rectified. She is number one in the nation, and we're very proud she is from CTHSS. Also, for the second year in a row, the Connecticut Technical High School System and Connecticut is number one in the auto radio production. We have two brothers from A.I. Prince Technical High School, Jacob and Brett Haran, who received this unique distinction for 2 years in a row, and we're very proud of them. And for the first time in 23 years of having this national automotive competition, Connecticut is number one in automotive. Connecticut is number one because of CTHSS. And Connecticut is number one because of the students from Norwich Tech, Devin Bilek and Jonathan O'Neill. So we're very proud of them as well. So that gives you a sense of all of the successes that we've had this past year. We're very proud of our students, our teachers, and our staff. The next section of the presentation focuses on Connecticut's investment in technical training. I'd like to bring your attention to this slide, which highlights the 30 career pathways that we present in our technical high schools. They are categorized under the 11 national clusters by the Association of Career and Technical Education. Although we are familiar with some of our trades like plumbing, heating and cooling, automotive, and electrical, I'd like to bring your attention to some new trades because we are being innovative and responsive to the needs in Connecticut. Biotechnology is in its second year at Norwich Technical High School. We have bioenvironmental technology at Grosso Tech and at AI Prince in Hartford, Connecticut. And we have a new adult welding program that came on board at Grosso Tech, part of our partnership with Electric Boat. This slide represents our effort to really define what it means to have a high school diploma from a technical high school. So when we talk about investment in career and technical education, this is a concrete example with specific metrics for each area that yields results for each student, each cohort of students. We just developed this year, and it was approved by our technical high school board. Our goal is to make sure that our students are ultimately life ready. They are life ready by being job ready, career ready, college ready, and work ready. And if you look at each of the quadrants, you will see specific metrics for each area, including portfolios, work-based learning opportunities, national and industry-recognized credentials, apprenticeships, and certifications. And the outcome, again, is a life-ready student with a high school diploma and recognized credentials. This next slide represents our focus on making sure that we capitalize on state assets. It's a topic that I've discussed before with this committee. So what we really want to do is show you a picture of what our schools do from 7:30 to 9 p.m. and how we can continue to capitalize on these assets and hopefully expand our programming across the state. First, from 7:30 to 2:30, we have the bulk of our student population, close to 11,000 students across the state of Connecticut in 20 locations. That is a technical education program that leads to a high school diploma and a high school credential. These students also have the opportunity to gain credits in community colleges and universities across the state. From 3 to 5, we'd like to continue vocational training. Those are high school students who are still part of their local districts, but who come to a technical high school to receive specific trade technology training based on regional needs. Short-term training and post-secondary technical training are partnerships that we have with the community colleges from 6 to 9. The short-term training is for unemployed or underemployed adults, and the post-secondary technical training is for present community college students, and that leads to a certificate program in advanced manufacturing. You'll see the locations at the bottom of the chart. And finally, the apprenticeship programs we run at 6 locations across the state. We serve over 1,169 students, and that is a program that is coordinated very closely with the Department of Labor. The next two slides focus on return on investment and some wage projections that many of you are familiar with at the national and at the local level in terms of worker earnings in the area of manufacturing. At the national level, that salary is 20% higher than an average worker's salary in other industries. And here in Connecticut, we saw an increase in average weekly earnings up to 17.8 from July 2015 to July 2016. So certainly, there's a return on investment when we look at manufacturing. And the similar slide highlights the need for Connecticut continued focus on construction and manufacturing overall. We look very closely at the projections from the DOL, the projections from our colleagues at DECD, CBIA, Workforce Investment Boards, and we also focus on a lot of qualitative data because we hear from a lot of employers across the state. So know that it's not only quantitative data, but we also look at that qualitative data. And the next two slides focus on our current enrollment in the area of manufacturing and how we are investing in manufacturing. I would like you to keep in mind this number, 1,559 students. And that number will be important. In a minute, you will hear from our colleagues from Electric Boat. We are presently enrolling 1,559 students in the area of manufacturing across the state. keep that figure in mind to see if it aligns with the emerging needs that Electric Boat has and a number of employers across the state of Connecticut. And last year, we graduated 189 students in precision machining, 2006. 23% of them attended post-secondary institutions, and we made a concerted effort, and the state invested $2 million of bonded money to bring the welding shop at Grosso Tech online, our partnership with Electric Boat, and invested $1 million in renovations for Bullard Havens to have a new precision machining manufacturing program. I'm going to stop there because the next section is partnerships, and I'd like to yield that time to our colleagues from Electric Boat, and then I will come back for your questions.
Thank you for joining us, gentlemen. And before you begin your presentation, if you could just, for the record, state your names and where you're from, that would be, and maybe your titles, that would be great.
Good morning. My name is Howard Melvin Jenkins, Jr., Manager of Human Resources from Electric Boat, General Dynamics Electric Boat. My position specifies in diversity and outreach. And I say, first of all, good morning to each of you, and thank you for this opportunity.
Good morning, everyone. My name is John Beauregard. I'm the president of the Eastern Connecticut Workforce Investment Board, and I, too, want to thank you for the opportunity to come and address you this morning on what we feel is a very important topic and one that we were eager to join Dr. Torres on in terms of sharing with you. So when we were given the option or the invitation from Dr. Torres to come and join, it was something that we jumped at just to spend a little bit of time with you and a handful of slides because basically what the Connecticut Technical High School system exemplifies to us is really what this manufacturing pipeline partnership that we're going to talk to you about they're the perfect example because what we're allowed to do in this program is to construct a community-wide group of aligned resources that will help to feed our key industry needs over the next several years. What you have on the slide there is if we're going to talk about the manufacturing pipeline, we wanted to give you a basic description as to what it is. However, I can probably give you a truncated explanation by simply saying it is a career pathway for manufacturing entry and advancement in Eastern Connecticut and in partner regions that we also work with.
To add to what John has identified, what is a very important, the strategic collaboration that we're involved with. We have sat down together collectively with industry and with academia, the technical schools, to understand exactly where the needs are within industry. And that has made a significant impact in regards to successes, in regards to what Dr. Torres has spoken of, as we began to look at where our needs are in regards to industry.
Before I address this slide, I think it's important to point out that your presentations this morning, both from Commissioner Jackson and Commissioner Smith from DOL and DECD, are also a big part of this initiative that we're going to talk about. We're going to sort of focus on the technical high school system for the purpose of this presentation, but we would be happy to speak with you at another time on their involvement as well because their support has been absolutely critical. So you might ask yourself, okay, well, why manufacturing? You designed this pipeline. You have a bunch of industries to pick from. Why manufacturing? And I guess I would show you three points on this particular slide. The first is the inflection point just after 2011. because that for us signified that manufacturing was going to pick up at a faster rate than every other industry in eastern and in particular southeastern Connecticut. Representative Johnson, Senator Austin are well aware of this already, but what this allowed us to do in working very closely with the Electric Bow and 56 other employers in the Eastern Advanced Manufacturing Alliance is to start to prepare for that 9% rise that is going to be sustained over several years. However, it's equally important, I think, to look at the left side of this slide to show you both the dilemma and the challenge that we had as a system. You've read in your newspapers, both national and maybe even to a state level, about the what had previously been a decline in manufacturing. Well, what happens with that is interest starts to subside in potential students. Some of the equipment that Dr. Torres alluded to in terms of putting out a new state-of-the-art welding lab, other things like that, all have to be rebuilt and relaunched, if you will, to start to meet the full economic potential of the region. So that's why we wanted to frame what the background was for this.
As you're aware, we at Electric Bow are in a very good position as we look at the work forecast and what the needs are in regards to what we have on our work scope. So if we look at the Virginia Class program as well as the Ohio Placement program and what we're currently in the Virginia Payload module, we have significant work which not just which supports the community but also requires a high demand in regards to what our workforce needs will be. With that in mind, we also look at the demographics relative to attrition. As we all have talked about in various conversations, we recognize the fact that we have an aging workforce. And with that in mind, it becomes ever more critical to recognize that we not only have an aging workforce, but manufacturing has not been on our radar screen. We have, and we must need to make sure that we emphasize the importance of the technical schools, because this is what brings us where we need to be in regards to supporting that particular critical skill that is needed in relative to manufacturing, specifically in submarine building. And we recognize the importance of engineers, but we need just as many, if not twice as many, manufacturers within the trades that are critical to the success of building the particular product to support our country. When we look at electricians, a young lady that is first in the nation, those are persons that we are looking at that cannot just come in as an electrician, but also grow within the particular companies as a leader and within management. So that particular basic skill can be honed, so that particular person cannot just be a laborer, but can also be a leader. And so that's extremely important. So welders, painters, carpenters, pipe fitters, those are essential areas that we are looking at. And not only that, when we look at what our work scope is, we're looking at approximately 600 folks for the next 20-plus years. That's significant. And so when you go back to that number of what Dr. Torres said, 1,559, that number equates, but it actually magnifies the fact that we need a lot of folks.
So directly on the heels of what Howard just mentioned, what we would like to share with you here is how we set out to go about building this manufacturing pipeline. And so keep in mind that figure, 600 people for the next 20 years. And so in many ways, what we knew was more what we didn't want versus what we did want. And what we didn't want was a one-off. What we didn't want was one solid or one initial program initiative that would allow us to put a dent in the short term, but not for the long term. So what we designed was this, a four-stage pipeline into manufacturing, entry, and advancement, where we could pull a thread through all of, and this didn't require a lot of additional money, to pull a thread through coordination and collaboration of all the outstanding resources that we have in the region. So just quickly going left to right for our high school students, and by the way, we've for the technical high school system, we've highlighted in blue areas where you could obviously point to them. Some of these were made out in Dr. Torres's earlier piece. But from the high school, obviously, the technical school graduates. We all know about that. For the in-school youth, I think this legislature should really take a bow for the investment that you make in summer jobs programs for these young people year in and year out. It's a tremendous commitment to building tomorrow's workforce and very important in an initiative like this. As you advance up the line to older youth, we pilot a program in Eastern Connecticut with Electric Boat's leadership called an Early College Opportunity. I won't get into a tremendous amount of detail, but it involves industry getting involved in the curriculum adjustment with working with the high schools, working with the community colleges, and pairing the students with a mentor so that when they complete their high school term, they are eligible for the courses they've completed with the community college to have an associate's degree. And for those of you who are familiar with the IBM model, it's very similar to the Pathways in Technology model, only we target it to exclusively manufacturing. Again, the Advanced Manufacturing Center, tremendous job by the legislature in terms of passing the Connecticut Jobs Bill. And as you know, we also, through the Department of Labor and others, won a Connecticut Advanced Manufacturing Initiative. These programs are tremendously important to the supply to employers like Electric Boat and their supply chain. Moving up to the advancement, incumbent worker training, we work very closely with the Connecticut Department of Labor on both that. We work closely with the Department of Economic and Community Development. For a lot of employers are saying that my next employer is right there on the floor. What I need to do is promote that person, train that person, and fill in behind them. That is one of the best investments this state can make. Apprenticeships also is critical to the advancement of adults moving up and advancing in the manufacturing industry. It was this last segment, though, that I want to spend just a tad more time with, because this speaks to Howard's last point. What we had in those first three segments was some outstanding programs that we could pull a thread through and start to advance this as a talent warehouse for employers. But the one thing we lacked was volume. We did not have the volume. We did not have those career changes. You have I won't say a stateful, but you know as well as I do, there are a number of young people, mid-career earners out there who are probably categorized in the underemployed category, not to their full economic potential. If we can convert those individuals to their full economic potential and they come over to the manufacturing industry, get trained, and become part of our whole job creation initiative and things like that. Now we have a legitimate farm system to feed our growth opportunities that Electric Boat, Pratt & Whitney, and others are providing our state. So that last piece, that talent warehouse concept, is a program we work closely with the Department of Labor on an application called the Workforce Innovation Fund.
And what this underlying slide actually does, it gets parents excited about manufacturing. It gets parents talking to their kids in regards to manufacturing. There are opportunities out there for career growth and for career development, and that's extremely important. We have to make sure that advanced manufacturing is up and running, but we have to make sure that we are engaging the community in its infancy so that they understand exactly its importance.
So it wasn't important enough for us to spend one slide on it. We want to spend one more slide just to drive that point home, and here it is. The evolution of that adult career changer in this state is really a combination of a number of different groups. Let's start with the legislature. When you passed the Connecticut Jobs Bill back in 2012 and you launched the Step Up program and you launched the Advanced Manufacturing Centers, you gave us a chance to go out and create opportunities with employers, and half of that group was targeted toward manufacturers. That opened a lot of doors for not only people to enter manufacturing, it gave smaller employers the desire to start to hire again after the recession. That was critical. So then it's up to us at the workforce board system, at the regional level, and working with our state agency partners to start to leverage some federal grants, which we did successfully. There were at least four on-the-job training grants that came in from the U.S. Department of Labor through either workforce boards or the Connecticut Department of Labor. In our region, it was $6 million in total. But the key to that was buying time until we could build the infrastructure, until we could get the training system designed so we could do most of this in the classroom and add to our capacity. And that's what you see in the talent warehouse concept. And maybe you could come up with a better term. That seems to be an easier one that folks latch on to in terms of understanding it. We are now using the public workforce system to house all of the individuals that employers are looking for, specifically manufacturers, because they are assessed, they are trained, and they are ready for work. And again, this gets back to trying to rise to the level of need that Howard had pointed out earlier. So by working together with our technical high schools and the community college, putting together that infrastructure of the facilities and the instructors and the equipment was so key to making this a reality.
And what this does for us, is actually particularly for our adult learners, it allows them a smooth transition to the workforce where that anxiety is not as steep. And the transition has proven itself to be very valuable where they're able to hit the ground running, which is extremely important.
Just one, Howard raises a good point, Boyd. Just one final point. That talent warehouse concept, that last initial grant, gave us, gave us the one piece that we were missing. We were fortunate that Governor Malloy and our delegation brought down Secretary of Labor Tom Perez about a year and a half ago to see what we were building, and we explained to him, look, the one piece we are missing is the career changer. We don't have, because at that time, remember, unemployment insurance was moving out of extended extended unemployment to back to 6 months. So people who wanted to retrain for manufacturing didn't have the long-term multiple months multiple months to give us in terms of preparing for it. So what we were able to do was, in working with employers, to condense that into a shorter term period, very intensive, 6, 8, sometimes 10 weeks, going in the morning to at night, excuse me, mid-afternoon to later at night, and coming out with the skills that employers had requested. So you're saying, okay, this sounds interesting, but is it working? So here's what we have so far. As you can see, the clip from the media on the right, they're actually using the same vernacular that we speak with, the manufacturing pipeline. This particular one was at Grasso Tech, which is where we have that state-of-the-art welding lab. There are multiple stakeholders in the governance. I want to thank the Connecticut Technical High School System, and in particular John Murphy, who's a member of the board with Howard, and the Workforce Investment Board with Howard and I, who has agreed to chair the pipeline. As far as funding goes, Connecticut, in working with the Department of Labor, they were one of only 6 recipients in the nation to get this Workforce Innovation Grant. And the training and employment numbers so far are kind of speak for themselves. We're very early on in the process, probably 8 months into it. 7 classes have completed, a 92% placement rate. And to speak to that volume issue in that first 8 months, this is a little outdated because we wrote it for 2 weeks ago, there's over 2,000 people already registered in that portal trying to get in. So the program has a very strong foundation, to say the least. I will say this in terms of the funding. Again, Senator Austin, Representative Johnson will tell you that when we and Commissioner Jackson recently opened a job center in Willimantic, no exaggeration, a philanthropist from the region came to the area, knew about this manufacturing pipeline we were described here in this presentation, and came with a check for over $500,000 just to have areas from her town be able to participate in it.
And just to share a good news story with the training that goes on, the graduates from these programs actually coming back and sharing with the students that are in the training at the time in regards to the benefits that they found with the program and how the transition has been extremely smooth. And that makes a big difference. That's not we're asking the graduates to go back, but they're going back on their own and sharing their stories. So as we look at where we are collectively and how the technical education program has been a benefit, we recognize that it's important that we maintain that engagement, we maintain that pipeline, we maintain that collaboration that is needed, and that we look at all aspects of our community, our high school students, our veterans, unemployed, and our underemployed, and that we're able to tap in and benefit from the knowledge base that they have actually established. The technical high schools have given us that foundation where we don't have to do a lot of repeatability. We can actually build on their strengths. Because what this will actually do, it will cut our qualifications in half in regards to those persons that we bring on board. And that's extremely important. As you understand, in regards to the area of business, we want to spend as less time in the training aspect as we can so we can start the actual work. And when we say hit the ground running, that is our goal, to make sure that we're able to do that. And so with the career technical high schools, it has been a pleasure collaborating with Dr. Torres and collaborating with John and collaborating with all the folks that have made this particular program very successful. And most importantly, I want to thank you all for your support, your more support, and your financial support that has helped us to be able to sit here proud in regards to what the state of Connecticut is doing.
So we'll finish up with this slide, just a quick recap on the importance of the technical high school system with us. Again, I think it's an important reminder. They always graduate students ready to contribute on the youth side, but we cannot forget their incredible ability to train adults. They've by working in partnership with the community college system, they've been unbelievably valuable partner to both us and the Department of Labor and DECD and others who sit on this manufacturing pipeline. We talked about in terms of the demand-driven or employer-driven training. You know, one thing I guess that jumps out to me about in working with the technical high school system and others on this is there has been very, very little in all of these slides that we've presented that has happened by accident or by happenstance. This is a lot of meetings, a lot of planning, a lot of strategic laying out of who's going to do what, when can we do it. We've met with Dr. Torres every place across not only Eastern Connecticut, sometimes in Middletown. We've met in all of the tech schools. We've met in my office. We've met at EB. We've, you know, the involvement of the employer community led by Electric Bow in the Eastern Advanced Manufacturing Alliance, along with the agencies in this state, has allowed us to get this far, and frankly, we think we're only at the beginning. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. That was a great presentation. I guess we'll have Dr. Torres come up, complete the presentation for the schools, and then we'll turn to questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Both of you.
So, Mr. Chairman, having heard from our partners from Electric Boat, we again thank you for your continued support and want to highlight the successes that we had this past school year, both with students, teachers, and administrators, and also with the partnerships that we continue to build with business and industry across the state. We're happy to take your questions at this time.
Thank you. I'd like to just start us off with a big picture question that really relates directly to the excellent presentation that you put together. And I guess before I ask my question, I just want to say to you, to your leadership team, to your partners in industry, I, for one, am extremely grateful to you all for the tremendous job you've done in ensuring that there's great articulation between our technical high schools and the job needs that are out there so that we have kids who are graduating at such a high rate and going straight into the workforce. I really think it reflects incredibly well on you and your whole team, and we appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
You have technical advisory committees at all of your tech high schools that have gentlemen like the ones we just heard from and others from all sorts of businesses around the state. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about how you go about selecting the representatives from business and industry, and then when it comes to their input, what type of input you take at the different schools and to what degree it's tailored to specific employers, as you would expect for EB, which has such a great need for hundreds of employees. And then I know you have smaller employers who may be representative of a whole, you know, class of industry that has needs. So I'm just wondering if you could describe to us how you select those representatives and how you work with them to get the optimal results.
Yes, thank you for that question. First of all, we select them by invitation. A lot of them also come to us because they are alumni and they're very proud to be able to give back. We're actually in the process of launching an alumni marketing campaign to share with all of you and people across the state that we have a lot of notable alumni that contribute to technical high schools in an advisory role. So that certainly will be eye-opening for a lot of folks to see that these are technical high school graduates. So we invite them. A lot of them come to us voluntarily, again, because they want to give back. They vary by region, and we have these advisory boards, as you say, at each of our technical high schools. Last year, we also formed a district-wide advisory board so that in my office and with our content consultants, we could have a better understanding of what those region needs are. You'll recall the slide that I showed at the beginning where we mapped the state in four regions. So at home office, we want to have a better understanding of what those needs are by region and how responsive we are being to those regions. For example, electric boat. They serve in various capacities. They certainly advise us in terms of curriculum to make sure that we are innovative, we're flexible, we're being responsive to their needs. Also in terms of equipment needs. So, for example, the welding shop that we developed for Grosso Tech was developed in close relationship with the Eastern Workforce Investment Board and Electric Boat to make sure that the training center that we're investing in is a training center that will meet their needs and ultimately will have the outcomes that we're looking for. They also serve as mentors to our students for our work-based learning programs, and I can say with certainty that many of the students that are hired as 11th and 12th graders as part of their work-based learning experience have a full-time job when they graduate because these are relationships that we've built during their career as a technical high school student. So again, they serve in a variety of roles for us, but they are integral. I say to my staff that they're really our bread and butter because those partnerships are really key to the work that we do across the state.
Thank you for that answer. And let me just say, having been at these hearings since they first began several years ago, I think we have the strongest connection between our technical high schools and business and industry today that we've ever had. And I think it serves your district and your students and Connecticut very well. So thank you very much for your work. I know my co-chair, Sarah Slosberg, has additional questions.
Thank you, Superintendent, to you and to your whole team and to the folks from Electric Boat as well. I'm sure there are a lot of people who have a lot of questions, so I'll keep my my remarks to a minimum and my questions probably be a little bit longer. But I also want to thank you for the great work. I think this is our work with the Connecticut Technical High School System aligned with our employers and making sure that that's a strong pipeline all around the state is probably, to me, one of the most important things we can be doing to improve our economy and our workforce and deal with those issues that I think that our constituents are most concerned about. So I thank everybody here for all of their great work. The question that I wanted to – I have a number of questions, but the first one I wanted to talk to you about is the elephant in the room, and that is the budget. We know that there was a proposal from the State Board of Education regarding shutting down two unnamed technical high schools. I wondered what your thoughts were about this and whether you still see that as something on the table. I, for one, have, it's not any surprise to anybody, I have publicly said that I think this is the wrong direction for us to be going in, that, in fact, you'll see the rest of my line of questioning is about how do we provide more access to more people in our state, exactly the opposite direction. But I wondered where you are on that, what that looks like, and where we go from here.
Thank you, Senator, and thank you for your continued support of our technical high school system. As you all know, the proposal that we shared is an exercise that all state agencies go through. Part of the directions, the instructions for the creation of that budget for fiscal year 2018-2019 entailed a 10% reduction of the baseline budget. That 10% reduction of the baseline budget means a $16.4 million reduction for fiscal year 2018 for us. What we try to convey through that exercise is what that $16.4 million would look like. Really, internally, we could come up with approximately $5 million, which would mean a reduction, a complete suspension of all of our athletic programs, continued savings from the suspension of our LPN programs, setting a target for the reduction of overtime and substitute expenses. The remaining balance would have to come from the closure of two unidentified technical high schools. Again, it's an exercise that we go through. We try to be as transparent as we can as a state agency to present the picture. Whether that materializes or not is a decision that others need to make. As superintendent, my primary focus is on the health, well-being, and success of all of our students.
Thank you for that answer. Can you talk to me a little bit about the budget cuts that you've already experienced in the 16-17 year, how that has affected the work that you do?
Yes, thank you. For this fiscal year, I froze 55 positions to net a savings from that. We have looked very closely at all areas within the organization, including our athletic programs, and we asked our principals to look very closely at enrollment in those programs, whether we could collapse, combine some of our programs to reduce the stipends and the costs for our coaches. All of you are probably aware that we suspended the LPN program and we're currently in conversations with our colleagues at the Board of Regents to develop a similar program there. We feel that these are healthy conversations and that is a logical next step for these adult allied health programs within the Board of Regents. We've also set overtime reduction goals for this year for that account and for the substitute account. So the primary savings from this year were really from the suspension of our allied health programs and the freeze of those 55 positions within the system.
Thank you very much for that answer. Can you tell me, do you have numbers, and if you don't have them in front of you, I'd be happy to take them at another time, how many students we have applying to technical high schools who we do not have spots for? Not a question of who is not qualified to, you know, who doesn't get to the level that they would actually get in the door, but, you know, what kind of waiting lists that we have for, you know, each high school and the various programs within them. I think that is something, I wouldn't assume you would have that in front of you.
Yes, I do.
You do have it in front of you. Well, then I will, and then I would be happy to hear the answer to the question here.
Yes, as you're all probably aware, I've spoken about capacity in the past, and it can give you ballpark figures. We normally get 6,000 applications for 3,000 seats. Interestingly enough, during the Thanksgiving holiday, I was reading a report from the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center, and Massachusetts has a similar issue. They have 3,200 students on waiting lists for their technical program. So I think the numbers are somewhat similar for the state. The Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center is conducting a study to explore the effectiveness and cost of expanding access to vocational education in Massachusetts. We are doing that internally within our system, And I can tell you that internally we know now, because of a recent report, that we have capacity for 600 additional students. In order to do that, our next step is determine where those seats would be, at what schools, and what the impact to both the operating and the capital budget would be. Operating, because we would probably need additional instructors, and the capital budget, because there would be infrastructure repairs and other things that we would need to take into consideration to bring other programs online. So, in short, we have approximately 3,000 students who applied who did not get admitted to our technical high schools.
Yeah. Well, I think those numbers are pretty telling in and of itself, that we have students who seek this out. And I know on my various tours of the technical high school system and the actual schools, when I speak to students, I ask them the question, how would you be doing if you were back at your traditional public high school? And the answer is very clear. I wouldn't be there. I would have dropped out, or I would definitely be in trouble. And instead, we're providing a pathway and an opportunity and a career for these students. So I appreciate your effort to gain greater access. With that, is part of your discussion for access to be working with your LEAs, your LEAs in your traditional public high schools? Is there some way that we can develop a better relationship between our public high school systems to expand access to those students who are interested, understanding to some extent that this is a question of, if you're in manufacturing, you have to be able to get to the machinery and whatnot, but I wondered if that's an avenue that you're pursuing.
Yes. Two strategies regarding that. The first one is really making sure that parents and students have all the information that they need to make an informed decision as an eighth grader and incoming ninth grader. So we continue with that. In your packet, you'll see some of the brochures we wanted to share with you about the services that we provide, and we share those with parents and prospective students. The second piece is that we really have tried to define what our day program looks like versus an afternoons program. So if you recall the earlier slide where I said that from 7:30 to 2:30 we have our technical training program. These are students who have a high school diploma, have nationally recognized credentials, and still need to meet by state statute graduation requirements and fulfill all of the requirements for the literacy and numeracy and so forth. From 3 to 5, we would like to continue to build those partnerships and relationships with local districts, as you point out. It is a great opportunity for students who are presently enrolled in a high school program but who would like specialized vocational training, whether it's in manufacturing, whether it's in electrical or carpentry, to come to us. They would remain part of their local high school, and the benefit to that is that it would impact an LEA's graduation rate. These students are not ours. They're an LEA's student, and we are just providing the vocational training. So I think that to answer your question, yes, there are a lot of opportunities. Funding is always the challenge. We had some of these partnerships last year. Because of funding this year, we are trying to determine how those programs will be up and running this year. But I would ask you to consider that particular slide and the different services that we are really able to provide for local students who would like access to a technical program.
Okay. Thank you. I think I'd like to get more information on that in the future in terms of what your proposal would be and what costs go along with that and where that would be available. Last session, we worked on hiring issues, and I understand that you've frozen 55 positions. But, you know, are you finding that that was a successful change that we had made to try to address some of the hiring challenges you were having?
Well, first of all, let me thank all of you for your continued support of our system and understanding that professional capital and the staffing within the system is integral to making sure that we have the outcomes that we all want. We continue to partner very closely with our colleagues at SDE and OPM to expedite the refill of those positions. We have undergone a lean training exercise to make sure that our approval process is value added to each step. Some of those steps have been eliminated to expedite the approval process, so I am encouraged that as we continue to move forward, those positions that remain unfilled will be filled and will have the approval, and we'll have those teachers, those custodians, and other staff members in place.
Thank you for that. One final question. It is clear that we've got a great and successful partnership in developing the Eastern Connecticut manufacturing pipeline, and I thank Electric Boat and others for that, for the leadership there. I'm wondering if there are any thoughts about trying to do something similar, maybe at a smaller scale in other parts of the state. I'm thinking more locally for myself. We've got Lockheed Martin in my backyard, and we know we've spoken to them about their changes and the talent pool that they're looking for, and we have Platt Tech also right there. I'm wondering if there are any thoughts about about that, different regions of the state.
Most definitely. We're presently in the design phase for the school renovation project for Platt Tech in your district, Milford. Part of that renovation and design phase includes a conversation with local business and industry to make sure that as we remodel, we redesign the school, we are responsive to those needs. So we will continue to have those conversations across the state. We are actively seeking and continuing conversations with Pratt & Whitney and Sikorsky, with the New Haven Manufacturers Association, folks from the solar energy industry, with a number of folks. And if there are individuals that you feel we need to reach out to, I would ask that you please get that information to me. We would be happy to partner with them and have those conversations.
Thank you very much. And again, thank you for
thank
all
you,
of the
Senator.
Great work that you do.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Austin, to be followed by Representative Eckert.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for the ability to make a couple comments and ask a couple of questions. And I appreciate very much the work that the Eastern Advanced Manufacturing Alliance and John Beauregard, as the president of the Eastern Workforce Investment Board, have been doing to make sure that we are having the right classes that provide the right workers for the jobs that are available not only at Electric Boat, but the 908 subcontractors that supply Electric Boat with products that they need to create the submarines that are necessary for our compact with the Navy. The one thing that I had a question on, in particular for Eastern Connecticut, we have two other large industries in the area having to do with the gaming industry, which is seeing a lot of fluctuation in employment based on a contraction of that industry. And I'm wondering if you are looking at the employees that are being shed from those particular positions and retraining them to the jobs that are necessary in manufacturing in Electric Boat and those subcontractors.
I can tell you that personally, as a district, we have not made that outreach, but we are happy to have those conversations. As I said at the beginning, we understand that part of our commitment is training incumbent displaced workers. We'd like to be able to provide that in the evening in many of our sites, so I would encourage you to maybe have a conversation afterwards and see how we could support that area of the state to make sure that those employees, as you say, are retrained and are serving that particular workforce in the eastern corner of the state.
Well, I know that working with the Eastern Workforce Investment Board and sector, there will be a report that comes out about those particular that particular workforce and those particular workers to see some growth for them as we move forward. Senator Schlossberg asked the questions that I had vis-a-vis infrastructure and how many students you can support at the technical schools in the eastern region, because while Electric Boat is looking at 600 workers a year, the subcontractors are also having a multiplier effect, and they're across the whole state. They're not just in eastern Connecticut. Those 908 reflect subcontractors across the whole state, and are we looking at them to make sure that their workforce needs are being met? I really think that the Eastern Advanced Manufacturing Alliance, along with yourself, needs to be commended for looking at programs that train workers for the jobs at hand. So we're not having a program that trains workers, which requires them to be retrained once they get on the job. And I think that that's something that we have to continue doing, because workers that are ready to hit the ground, as you say, running, are the best workers that we could have on the ground for our employers that are looking for a trained workforce.
And just to reference the numbers that Electric Boat shared in terms of hiring approximately 600 for the next 20 years, if we graduate less than 200 students in precision machining every year, that's certainly not enough to fulfill the needs of Electric Boat. And then you add the other employers in the region. It's certainly a conversation that we need to have in terms of how we can continue to provide the capacity and the number of trained employees that not only Electric Boat, but Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, the small and mid-sized manufacturers, and the solar energy industry, and everyone really needs. I'd like to point out, and I know that the Department of Labor and the Department of Economic Development will talk about this during their presentation, but we're not only talking about filling new jobs, but also replacing the aging workforce. And we look at those numbers very closely. We are concerned about whether we have the capacity to fill that. And we are also concerned about the number of students who would like to have access and unfortunately don't have access. So I think that part of our conversation is to continue to look very closely at those numbers and develop a plan about the future of workforce in Connecticut. So I thank you for your comment, and I think we need to look very closely at all of the regions within the state to ensure that we have that workforce.
And my last point, when you answered Senator Schlossberg in regards to the number of seats that we could add into current technical schools, can we get those seats that are currently available that we're not filling right now, that we would have the capacity to fill? What would that be, and what are the dollars that you would need for your teaching staff and whatever other staff are available? I would also like to be in that loop on getting that information, because I think that we need to expand our technical schools and expand the programs that we have. So I'd appreciate being kept in the loop on that.
Thank you, Senator. And we will go through that internal exercise. We will delineate what is needed, and we'll be happy to share that information with this committee.
And I just want to thank you for your commitment to the state.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Representative Acker, to be followed by Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for this wonderful presentation. Your presentations are already very comprehensive, and thank you for the gentleman also, John and Howard, for your input. It's very, very important for us to hear that. Quickly, the status of the aerospace in Hartford, I have some people in my district that attend and or work there. So can you give me the where we're at with the aerospace program?
I assume you're referring to the CT Aerotech.
CT Aerotech,
School
yep.
of Aviation. That School of Aviation is open for business. The next incoming class will come in the spring of 2017. This past summer, we had some conversations about the future of the program. We recognize that the program provides a unique service to the state. So working very closely with our board, we ensured that we could have an incoming class in the fall. There was an incoming class this past fall, and there will be a new class in the spring of 2017. So we are open for business in Hartford.
Thank you. And then the post-secondary opportunities that you have, and they're fee-based, correct? Are they fee-based? The post-secondary, they're fee-based, right? So they pay somebody comes in,
That's through a partnership with the community college. I could not speak about the specifics. Our role is really in terms of the curriculum, the training, and the facilities, and then any fee that is associated with the student is something that is really under the jurisdiction of the community colleges or the Workforce Investment Board. When we have the community colleges use our facilities for short-term training, we ask them to pay a facility use fee as part of the partnership, and that's really the extent of our role.
That's what I wanted to find out, if it's something that we're working together on, and that's it. I know it's one pocket to the other, but the fact that you have a budget and they have a budget, making sure that you're compensated for this, your district is compensated for that. And I just want to touch on the attrition factor. Whether we're adding new jobs or not in the state of Connecticut, the attrition factor is there. As people know that I work in the trades. I'm going from here to go pull wire at a building right here in Hartford, Connecticut. The people are my age, folks, and this is an easy work. They're glad that these young people there, I hope there's some more electricians over there, you know, or whatever you may be doing, but thank you. That's the factor. We have to fill slots. And that's a key component, is that as we're aging and that we have to have these filling in. And just to give you a statistic to close, I know we have some other speakers, is that coming out of a community college, this comes from the Department of Labor, coming out of a community college, a technical high school system, as an apprentice electrician, you only have one more year to go to get your license and you can sit and test. And that's a $46,000 a year job at 19 and 20 years old. So we are investing back. They can pay. So it's an investment that we need to make. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Dr. Torres, for your comprehensive program again today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson, to be followed by Representative Cook. And at
Representative
Cook,
Chair,
we will be moving on to DECD and Department of Labor.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much, Superintendent Torres, for your wonderful presentation today. And I just wanted to make a few remarks and then ask a question or two. First of all, I just want to say that I am just so pleased with the work that's been being done in Eastern Connecticut with Electric Boat and our Workforce Investment Board, and that coordination has just been fabulous. So I want to thank them for the work. They've been working hard also with Wyndham High School, and we have the early college program in Wyndham High. And the Austin Foundation grant was just totally wonderful, and it shows that there's a huge commitment in our region, in the Wyndham region and in Eastern Connecticut, for making sure we bring back manufacturing, because that is something that Wyndham has been historically, and I think that we want to go into the next level. And, of course, as you mentioned, we have new jobs, we have aging workforce, and we also have changes in technology that are really something that we have to be able to focus on, those changes. And with that in mind, I'm thinking in terms of what we have as a resource and what we have as assets in the Wyndham region, which includes, of course, what I've already just mentioned, but also Eastern Connecticut State University, their Sustainable Energy Institute. The synergy there in the manufacturing center that was put together just recently in Eastern Connecticut, plus what we have for advisory technology at the University of Connecticut for manufacturing throughout the state when there are difficulties with problems in manufacturing, that they can go to the University of Connecticut as a resource. So these are things that I'm very, very excited about, and I see the chance for even more synergy and more expansion, especially with respect to what Wyndham Tech is doing. So I'm just wondering, in terms of your presentation and just taking a little bit step forward, where are we going with connecting with all these different programs that with Wyndham Tech?
Thank you, Representative, and thank you for your comments about Wyndham Tech and the partnership in that region of the state. We work very closely with the Institute of Sustainable Energy at Eastern Connecticut State University and also our colleagues at UConn. Part of our work for the last 3 years have been to train students in green jobs, jobs of the future in the solar energy industry. Last year, one of the folks in my office had shared with me that any student who wanted a job with the solar energy industry could get a job, because there were a lot of jobs out there, and there certainly was a need for it. So please be assured that we work very closely with them. We want to continue to work with them. If you feel that there may be opportunities or committees that we need to be involved in, we would certainly welcome that. We want to make sure that Wyndham Tech and the schools in that region, Region 4, continue to develop that synergy that you describe with the business and industry partners in that region of the state.
Thank you so much for that. And then the other thing, we did get the state innovation grant for the region. So we're looking at, you know, doing more coordination there. So perhaps it would be good for me to attend one of the technical advisory committee meetings that you have. I'd love to invite myself. And
we'd love to have you join. We'd love to have you join, and I'll take this opportunity to invite you to the Wyndham Technical High School open house on December 6th.
I'll be out of town at that time, but I'll be glad to go to another meeting. But thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you for your good work.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Cook.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Torres, I cannot thank you enough for your commitment and dedication to our students, our community, and our business community as well. And for all the businesses that have thought it through and partnered with our schools and our young people. And I think it's important to recognize that the students that are sitting here with SkillUSA shirts on that have represented not only our technical school, but us as a state. It's such an important challenge. I mean, and if anybody's ever not or has watched these guys, there's some great videos online. It is an amazing, amazing opportunity. You guys should be so proud of the accomplishments that you have. And I encourage you all to continue and to give back and explain to the students that are coming up in the world that it's important to get involved. My brief question would be this. Do you happen to know the percentage of students that not only graduate from high school, so we heard that, but that go on to college as opposed to going into the business world, or maybe they do both. But do you know that percentage?
Yes, I have some rough percentages. So close to 50% of our students go into some form of post-secondary education. Most of them follow a community college track because, again, we have a close partnership with them, and many of them can gain up to 12 credits in a particular career pathway, so that's certainly attractive to youngster and his or her family. Over 30% of our students are gainfully employed in the state of Connecticut. About 7% are education and working. Every year we have anywhere from 6 to 7% that go into the military. A couple weeks ago I visited one of the National Guard bases here in Connecticut. Let me tell you, we don't have enough kids to go around. They're also recruiting, and they have their particular needs as well. So that gives you a rough estimate of where we are. But close to 50% of our students go into some form of post-secondary education. As I said in the beginning, we want to make sure that our kids are college, career, work ready, and job ready. When you talk about return on investment, the return on investment is really here with these students and the number of students that were able to stay gainfully employed here in the state of Connecticut.
Thank you for that. And the only other question I have to follow up with that is, how many years past or out do you track, and I know that's a bad word in education world, but do you follow your students and to what their longevity is and how far that you are able to keep in contact with them and what they do, like is it a 5-year path, a 10-year path?
That is an excellent question, and we've worked very closely with our board and with the Board of Regents to be able to get better data. That's one of our goals, to be able to get better data. Right now would probably be up to 2 years or so. We'd like to have longitudinal data. Much of the longitudinal data is self-reported data, and after a while it's difficult to track some of these youngsters. It's easier to track them if they're within the state of Connecticut and they're part of the Board of Regents. So moving forward, we will have better data for you in that area.
Thank you, and thank you so very much for everything that you're doing. And great job, guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. I think, if the committees had their druthers, we'd be going on for another hour or two. But we have the Department of Economic and Community Development here, and also the Department of Labor. So I thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you all.
I think some members will be approaching you and some folks from EB with sidebar questions.
Of course.
But you are relieved from sitting in front of the microphone. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all. Thank you all.
If we could hear now from Deputy Commissioner Bart Collin and Senior Development Specialist Lindy Lee Gold from DECD, that would be terrific.
Students going back to class, I presume, which is good.
Yeah,
of course.
Welcome.
Good morning, members of the committee and chairs, and thank you to give us an opportunity to talk about the importance of our technical high school system in the economy. My name is Bart Kola. I'm deputy commissioner at DECD for the last 10 months, and that's also one of the reasons I brought my esteemed colleague, Lindy Gold, who has many more months under her belt in economic development in this state. Catherine Smith, who is very excited to be on the board of the technical high school system, sends her regards and regrets she couldn't be here to testify in person. From an economic development perspective, we've been focusing for some time now on specific industry clusters. Some of them have traditionally been the backbone of the state's economy. Others are ones where we anticipate growth, and three of them have already been mentioned in the prior presentations: health and bioscience, green energy, and then, of course, advanced manufacturing. And I think I've been very excited to learn more about manufacturing. My own background is in financial services. To learn that we have 4,500 manufacturing businesses in the state, together employing about 160,000 workers in the state, they generate about $27 billion in economic output. It's about 10% of our economy, so a really important part of Connecticut's economy. And I think the exciting news has been that after some years of challenges in advanced manufacturing, we're starting to see growth again. And part of, and it's already been mentioned before, the developments that we have to watch closely and prepare for is the aging workforce. And we're extremely fortunate to have the long-term commitments of at least three very large manufacturing companies in the state, UTC and Pratt & Whitney, Electric Boat, and Sikorsky, that have really committed to stay here and grow here for the next 10, 15 years. And with that growth comes the need for their supply chains to keep up with the production as well. If you start to add up the anticipated replacement jobs of these large companies and their supply chains, about 1,000 companies in aerospace, hundreds of companies in the shipbuilding supply chain as well, the question really starts to become, will we have sufficient talented workforce to replace all these jobs and to fill the net new job growth that some of the companies have already announced? In our work in trying to help Connecticut-based companies grow and also attract businesses from other states, the talented workforce is the key reason for companies to want to be here. I met with a company from Kansas recently and was prepared to talk about the type of assistance the state could offer. And the president of the company said, well, that's really very interesting, but the first thing I need to be convinced of is that I can find the talented workforce to grow, to establish and grow my business here. Without it, I'm not interested in any other form of assistance. So for me, it was a very clear testimony to why the workforce is so so important. And traditionally, it has been our strength, and it has to continue to be. So where does this talent workforce come from? You know, obviously, the collective output of our 42 universities and colleges are an important part there as well. But particularly in advanced manufacturing, the technical high schools play a crucial role. I met with a CEO of a manufacturing company, and he grew up in Poland, and he said one of the things that he found so interesting of living and growing his business in the United States was that there has been such a emphasis on success in life and in career requires a college degree. And he basically said, we can offer high school, technical high school graduates wonderful careers, wonderful starting salaries, and they will find, and the parents will find, that working in our company is not what manufacturing might have been like 30 years ago. And so part of his point also was, some of these students that start with us coming out of the technical high schools start a career without a $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 college debt. And he also said it doesn't mean that education would stop there. We have a lot of people that we hire, he said, that we later on send back for additional education, sometimes paid for by the company. So I was really thrilled to, in working with Dr. Torres and hearing her speak, that, and the question came up from Representative Cook, that the system is very much focused not only on graduation rates and college enrollment rates, but also specifically tracks how many graduating students actually directly join the workforce. So I think that the technical high schools in bringing the technical skills to the front line, and not just to their students, but also to their parents, and get them excited about the opportunities and the changing skills of advanced manufacturing over time is wonderful. The role that they play in incumbent worker training and also adult training, and I think as a state with a relatively flat population, that we should be really grateful that the technical high school system also makes sure that existing workers can be retrained in the type of jobs that are necessary. So in closing, I think we're very fortunate as a state of Connecticut to have an ecosystem that can really lean on education, on the business and the government and the business partners in our community working together and collaborating to really make sure that what has traditionally been one of our strengths, our talent workforce, will continue to be so. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, I'll start with just a big picture question. So your commissioner in her written testimony and you in your spoken testimony referenced the fact that you collaborate with stakeholders in the business community, and if there are needs and gaps that are not being met for them, you convey those to the technical high school system, either directly through the commissioner's participation on the board or other communications to Dr. Torres and her team. I'm wondering if that bridging and communication includes DECD recommending that either specific people from the business and industry clusters you've identified are included in the advisory councils for the different schools, whether that's part of what you do, or what type of information you make sure you're conveying to our technical high school system?
I happen to sit on not only all of the regional workforce investment boards, but also boards like the New Haven Manufacturing Association, a new group, relatively new, that we've convened, the Southwestern Manufacturers Association, and we've started one in the Northwest, and then the Waterbury Group of Small Manufacturers Associations. I'm pleased to say that as state agencies, we're operating seamlessly. We are the Department of Labor, DECD, the technical high schools, and the community colleges all sit together in those meetings. They're at least monthly. I also participate in the manufacturing pipeline with the EWIB, in addition to sitting on their board. There is such a really great cross dissemination of information, needs, plant tours. When we do the Dream It, Do It, we do that in concert with them too, in a real effort to recruit young people to the world of technical high schools and beyond.
Yeah, maybe a couple of comments to add. You know, one of the mechanisms that we use to make sure that the agenda of the need is driven by the business community, the Manufacturing Innovation Fund Advisory Board, the fund board, is comprised of, I believe, 13 members, 11 of which are representatives from the business. They help set the agenda. One of the decisions and outputs of that board has been the creation of another apprenticeship program and an incumbent workers training program. The Department of Labor is really our partner and executes on those programs, and they work with the various schools, including the technical high schools, to make sure that the right type of training program is available across the entire state. So that's another way we make sure that we get the input from business directly in what is needed for the types of jobs that they need to fill.
I would say one other thing, and that is that we are not at all siloed, so that the information that comes forth from all of these groups is shared. The responsibility for implementing what we can implement in our various groups is on the table, and there are deliverables, and we're all accountable for it. So it's a pretty good system, I think.
Thank you for those very helpful responses. Appreciate it. Representative Backen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for your input today. A couple things. So you had mentioned the trip and your discussion with a Kansas employee, I believe it was, and you talked about at first, you know, here's what Connecticut can help you in terms of incentivizing. Do you bring essentially a packet with you that talks about our workforce capital law, that talks about things like that along with the financial incentives? Is that something that you present to them that says this is why Connecticut? It's because we have the workers?
Well, in fact, often we will bring labor with us, and very often community colleges or workforce boards with us when we meet with a new client, so that we can all address our areas of expertise.
Thank you. And that's great, because I think that would be, I mean, a lot of people care, you know, yeah, we know what it costs here, but if I have to reach outside the borders to hire people, why work inside the Connecticut borders? And then obviously, you know, things that, you know, if they looked at a state that, you know, sometimes our newspaper headlines read things or in the papers that talk about, you know, potentially closing of technical schools where they may be looking for workers and or cuts to the community colleges that have made investments. I mean, so if they see that, I mean, that's, and how would you handle that or in those discussions, if at all? Thank you.
So I've been thinking about that question quite a bit, and the question comes up when you meet with businesses, and it's a challenging conversation to have, because on the one hand, businesses are looking for fiscal stable environments, which is also one of the challenges, obviously, as a state that we, and the long-term liabilities that we have to face and find a way to solve for. And so, ultimately, I think there's a great understanding, particularly for people in business, that do the same thing. They have a revenue stream, and they have expenses, and they need sometimes to make very difficult decisions. What I also try to emphasize, if the particular question would come up, what if two of the technical high schools were to close? That still means there's still 15 schools available to do a lot of good work. And I feel in general about when I get the question about the budget environment, to me, in my first week on the job, actually, I heard the governor make a very clear statement. As a state, we should not, you know, spend more money than we expect to get in. That statement makes a lot of sense to me. At the same time, economic development is one of the core things that this administration believes in can help continue to make Connecticut a good place to do business. So I think there is a general recognition and an acknowledgement that in an overall tough budget environment that you may have to make tough decisions. At the same time, even if you have to cut some of your budget, let's focus on the part of the budget still left over to do good things.
Thank you, and welcome to DECD.
Thank you.
Look forward to working with you. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, thank you very much for your time.
You.
And we'll call up Commissioner Scott Jackson of the Department of Labor and his Director of Office of Research, Andy Conley.
Thank you, and I hope everyone is ready for a scintillating discussion of data. We have heard quite a bit, certainly in the questions, about how we coordinate. And one of the sources of our coordination is the data that we are able to produce through Dr. Condon and his Office of Research, so we are certainly happy to be here to be part of this conversation. Friends and colleagues, it is my great pleasure to join you here this morning. My name is Scott Jackson, and I serve as the Commissioner of Labor for the State of Connecticut, and I am joined by my colleague today, Dr. Andy Condon, Director of Research for the agency. I believe that good public policy is necessarily rooted in good data. We all have instincts, and in large measure, those instincts lead to rational decision-making. But when we look long-term, when we look at the public policy determinations that cause us to take a fork in the road, to go right or to go left, the decisions that impact those around us need to be supported by good information, not just good intuition. I'm here to affirm today that at the state and with our private sector partners, we have the capacity to provide such information, to perform that analysis, and ultimately to assist you in developing the forward-thinking public policy necessary to cement Connecticut as a global leader in the 21st century economy. I came to the Department of Labor earlier this year after 22 years of work in federal, state, and local government. Each has its challenges, each has its opportunities. When I came to labor, I will admit to being a little concerned that from my wing in a building on Follybrook Boulevard in Wethersfield, Connecticut, I might be a little distant from the people we serve, and therefore my instinct, my intuition, might veer off course. But just yesterday, I was reminded by a colleague about a story I told a few months ago. I was cooking dinner on a Saturday evening this summer when the doorbell rang. It was two young men, one in his late teens, one in his early 20s. They were selling cleaning supplies and claimed that they were independent contractors. Or more specific to the language of my agency, they were told by their employer that they were independent contractors. I said to them that I admired their grit in going door to door, but there was a better way. Through qualified employment and training services, through apprenticeships, there was a better way to secure their future. You saw in one of Dr. Torres' slides the student profile. I was very happy to see that student profile that under career readiness, apprenticeship was the number one item identified. Apprenticeship has been the way through centuries that young women and men have learned their trade, perfected their craft, and been able to support their families. But here is the honest truth about that story. Either they did not believe me, or they thought at their ages it was already too late, because they left my front step. And even when I chased them down the block after writing my direct number on a couple of business cards and pleaded with them to call me, that call never came. So what's the lesson? We need to do more. We need to do it earlier, we need to do it faster, and we need to do it more in public. We need to do it all in a data-informed and principled fashion. I was happy to be joined by two of my colleagues on the Connecticut Technical High School Board, Chairman Trefry and Mr. Barrasso. Dr. Torres provided to all of us on the board a book that she also delivered to all of the students, I Am Malala, written by Nobel Peace Prize winner Malala Yousafzai. One district, one book is what Dr. Torres says. So I read every word, and I dog-eared one page where Malala talks about the normalization of destructive behavior. We cannot normalize a lack of faith in our institutions. We cannot normalize mediocrity. We cannot normalize an economy in which two young men think their best shot consists of roaming strange neighborhoods selling soap. And the only way we as a culture are going to do better, the only way that those two young men on my front step are going to have faith, is for all of us to do what we do as partners, but do it better, do it earlier, and do it faster. So, my friends, this is what we do. We grow, we evolve, we adapt to the needs of the day. We work to create an economy built for tomorrow, not yesterday. And those jobs require good training, thoughtful planning, and a genuinely collaborative spirit, not only among government professionals and academics, but with the business leaders who understand the transformations of the economy that are happening today. This is the North Star of our annual Training and Education Planning System report, where we're going is informed by where we have been. Strategic investments, job training, and school curricula, they all coalesce into a public policy standard necessary to make sure our children and our economy are well positioned for success. As we used to say in my neighborhood, and Representative D'Agostino has stepped out, but he is from my neighborhood, you've got to keep your eyes on the prize. The reality is that strong partnerships must exist between employers, school systems, state agencies, workforce development boards, and nonprofits. We must work together to ensure our programs and training are aligned with quickly evolving economic needs. We must recommit to our laser focus on 5 points: developing strong knowledge base, developing technical skill, developing customer service ethic, critical thinking, and problem solving. We must maintain our fidelity in following this 5-pointed North Star. I'll now turn the discussion over to Dr. Condon for a more in-depth overview of the report's findings. While there are a few areas in which we recommend further research, we are on the right track, and the majority of Connecticut's vocational programs are training the women and men of this state for in-demand jobs that need to be filled. I want to thank those who have spent so much time and effort, who have expended so much personal capital in promoting the effectiveness of our technical high schools and mining the data for additional efficiencies. This report, I hope, will help build upon prior successes and accelerate the growth that is clearly within our grasp. Thank you. Dr. Condon.
Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you for the opportunity to come and talk to you. My name is Andy Condon. I'm the director of the Office of Research at the Department of Labor, and we conduct an annual analysis every year in support of the VOTEC institutions to look at the supply and demand of job opportunities in the state and to take a look at least at some level on whether or not the kinds of programs that are being offered by VOTEC and the numbers of people that are in them are consistent with the apparent demand for those occupations in the state. Before I begin that, because I don't want to forget, there was a question asked, I believe, by Representative Cook, and I'm sorry she's no longer here, about tracking the workforce outcomes of students in the state. Labor is part of a program, along with the State Department of Education and the Board of Regents and community and state colleges and universities, called P20 Win, which is about doing just that. We are relatively new, we are able to link longitudinal data from the various educational institutions and follow these individuals into workforce outcomes to be able to answer questions like, where are these people working? What kinds of incomes are they expected to make? We are just testing the ability to follow students out of secondary school to do this. The challenge is matching them to our workforce outcome data, given that we don't have Social Security numbers for secondary students, and that's how we match people into the workforce. We have a system that we think will help us do that. We should know relatively shortly whether we can, and if we can, we'll be able to answer the question the representative asked with a whole lot more precision than we were able to in the past. As to our report, we're now in the 80th month of recovery since the deep employment recession of 2008 to early 2010. Average employment growth over that period has been about 1% per year, generating in any particular year between 10 and 15,000 net new jobs annually. This year, that is 2016, we projected, the agency projected a slightly lower pace of growth, 0.7%, a pace we were exceeding until approximately June of this year. Now it looks, after the last few months of reports, we may be close to the rate of increase we originally forecast. Incomes have been slow to recover during this period until quite late recently. For example, this year, as of August, we are seeing an annual year-over-year increase in average growth rates of incomes of 3.5%. The job recovery has been broad-based across most industry sectors, with only government, finance and insurance, durable goods manufacture, and natural resource activities not fully recovered from the recession. And as has been mentioned, I think, by all the reports so far, manufacturing is kind of a special case. We have not seen any real growth in employment in manufacture since the mid-1980s, the so-called Reagan defense buildup. That is not because manufacturing does not remain important in the state, but it is one of the most productive industries we see. And productivity sometimes means getting more done with fewer people. On a more recent basis, although we have not seen an increase in manufacturing employment over time, in the last year we are, that is the last 12-month period, we are seeing growth in manufacturing employment. And I think that's representative of a lot of discussions we've already heard today. And in fact, over the last year, all industry sectors show over-the-year growth, with the exception of government and construction. Our projections through 2017 indicate we will see growth in all the sectors except the aforementioned government, the small information sector, and perhaps manufacturing, although recent data indicates we might actually see for the first time in 25 years or so an increase in manufacturing employment. The analysis we conduct every year is one of combining our own long-term occupational projections, which are based in industry projections over 10 years, and then using our Occupational Employment Statistics Survey to turn those industry projections into staffing patterns and therefore occupational projections. We match those up against the supply, if you like, of completers of educational programs at various levels in the state. So we have some measure of demand for occupations and some measure of supply. We call that program TEPS, the Training and Education Planning Program. The results of that analysis, as they particularly apply to jobs that require a VOTEC-like education, that is a high school education or less, and or a post-secondary certificate or less, are included in the report, which you all have in front of you. The report outlines the fastest growing occupations in that category. We provide the top 50. We also, by contrast, provide the bottom 50 so that one can take a look at, see both where our economy is growing and what occupations may be becoming antique, if you like. In general, the analysis of the educational programs offered by the vocational high school system appear to be in good alignment with the apparent demand for new entrants into occupations, they're designed to service. There are very few cases where, based on our analysis, vocational programs appear to be producing candidates for jobs that might not exist, and that is the idea of the alignment of the workforce. Our data does indicate that there are a couple of occupations that need to be looked at, but just because our TEPS indicators indicate that a program might be being an occupation, I should say, might be being oversupplied, it does not mean there isn't reasons for that to occur that we cannot measure. However, the program did take the analysis did indicate that we should particularly look at automotive technology, computer installation, and repair technology, and electrician programs to assure that those fields are not being oversupplied. That is, that there are jobs for the students completing those programs. What the TEPS program does not measure adequately is if there are 100 students being produced for completing a particular program of training, some of those, as was mentioned previously, are going on for further training, going on to a college education. We can't measure that. We just look at it as 100 new students in a particular program of study aimed at a particular kind of occupation. So it might well be in these aforementioned disciplines that there are good explanations for the number of completers and that they are on career paths that lead to success. Uh, Finally, what we've done is produce a table, which is at the end of the analysis, of occupations that appear to be growing in demand, that appear to be suitable for the kinds of education levels that a Voc-Tech school might provide, but for which there are no apparent training programs now. We provide this list as a list to look at for possible opportunities for future expansion. It is possible that in many of these occupations there is no training provided because there is none necessary, that it's more likely that these people are more efficiently trained on the job. Nevertheless, we provide it to the Voc-Tech institutions for their planning purposes. And with that, we take any questions you have.
Thank you very much for the testimony both of you provided and for the very helpful data. It really it is useful to be able to look at the specific job categories for us. I imagine it is for the technical high school personnel as well. Are there questions? Senator Austin.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the data. I was looking at one particular slide on page 5 of the report that you have that talks about the loss of government jobs. And I think what you're including in here is also the gaming industry jobs. Is that true?
Yes, it is by convention, both in Connecticut and across the country, that jobs that occur on Native American reservations are counted in the government category.
And do you have an ability to break out the jobs that we're losing in the gaming industry? And the reason why I'm asking that is because the two casinos happen to be in eastern Connecticut, and those decimating the number of available jobs in eastern Connecticut, even though Electric Boat and some of the other manufacturers are ramping up. That 400% decrease in jobs, what is that in relation to specific labor markets or specifically to the gaming industry?
We can't report our administrative data directly about the gaming industry because we're not permitted to release information that might identify a firm. By both federal statute and state statute, we can't do that. However, there is a program where we supply data to the Census Department, and they do some magic wand waving over the data, which one of the results of which is it allows us to report that information. So the bottom line answer is yes, we can report to you. I don't have the figures in front of me. What the change in the gaming industry is, at least over the last several years.
And could you get that to us here?
Yes.
So that we would have an idea on what we're looking at in regards to numbers of workers who we need to retrain? Obviously, if someone's going from gaming to perhaps a manufacturing job, they need some retraining.
Absolutely, and I actually believe we are supplying that information to someone at DECD for a report that has been commissioned.
That I've asked for, yes. It's actually my report that I'm asking for, but I think that would be also helpful to other people on this committee.
Yes.
So, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Senator. Other questions? Senator Slosberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know our time is running short, so thank you very much for the presentation. I'm one who loves data, so I love what you just gave us, which is really awesome. I would note, I think two things that just jumped out at me, and I'd like to follow up on it another time. On page 8, when we talk about the top 100 Connecticut occupations and their growth, it's interesting to me the top line is customer service representatives, an area that I don't really think we train for. And the second thing is child care workers, where we also, and also the amount of money that the median wage there. And then the third line being first line supervisors of office and administrative work, where that median average annual salary wage is $60,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are things for us to highlight and to pay attention to. I just wanted to make sure I understood on your final page table 6, page 14, if I understand what you said, and I just want to make sure I got this right, is this table tells us where there will be job growth, but where we have no programs. Is that correct?
That's essentially correct. Where there will be where we are projecting growth in occupations that require a high school degree or less, or a post-secondary certificate or less, and for which there do not appear to be any apparent training programs. At least it did not appear so to us.
Okay, that's terrific. That's good data for us to have, and I think that I would follow up on that at another time with this group, but I just wanted to make sure I understood it. But again, thank you for your presentation, for all the great data.
If I may take a moment to make a comment on the first part of your question there. There are some industry-recognized credentials as it relates to customer service training, and so that's something that through our boards we do work on. But when you bring up child care and home care for elders is something that we are going to have to do a lot of work with. Otherwise, we will end up in a race to the bottom where we are simply finding the lowest cost individual, you know, with a pulse to watch the people who we care about most dearly. And so that's something that that I've made a point of referencing whenever I have the opportunity, and you sort of opened the door for me on that one, and so I appreciate it. But it is something that we're going to, you know, culturally we're going to have to take a look at how we're taking care of our vulnerable populations.
Well, I completely agree with you, and I'm glad you took advantage of my softball there, which was what it was intended to do. So thank you very much, and I'm sorry that Bobby Sanchez isn't here, because I'm sure he'd like to weigh in. So thank you again.
Thank you. And even though Representative Sanchez isn't here, the rest of us also appreciate that. A good point you've made. With that, I think I'm going to declare this public hearing on the Tech High School system adjourned. We're going to take just 5 minutes to allow